Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3 and Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, on Monday, Montgomery County began providing COVID-19 home testing kits and KN95 masks to its residents, Monday as in today. This followed a high-spirited virtual town hall meeting the day before with county residents. Some parents and students on that virtual town hall meeting voiced their concerns over the county's school COVID policies. That just one of the big issues the county will be dealing with in 2020. Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich will join us to talk about the issues facing the county in the new year. We'd also like to hear from you, your questions, your concerns, your comments. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We hope you join us for this conversation. Executive Elrich, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Always enjoyed being here.
Well, let's start off first. I mentioned right at the top of my introduction that COVID obviously is taking center stage, not just in the county, but across the nation. And the Omicron variant is hitting so many of us, and I believe it has hit you also. You are isolating now. Can you update us on how you're feeling and how you're doing health-wise?
Yeah, so I mean, the frustrating thing is I'm in day 10 and I tested positive again today. So this idea that if you get to day 5, you can just walk around and everything's perfectly fine. I'm a poster child for why that's not true. I still have sniffles and my nose is congested. And so I'm probably still a possible carrier at day 10. And I feel pretty good. If I didn't have a runny nose, I mean, in fact, if I did have a runny nose and I didn't think it was Omicron, I'd be outside and I could do a kind of normal things, but I obviously can't do that. So it's still lingering with me, and I don't know how I'm going to test tomorrow, but I'm hoping one of these mornings I wake up and I'm negative.
And so do you have testing availability to you every day?
I got some kits, and I'll go out and get more if I run out of what I've got. I've got a few more days left. I didn't test every day because I could kind of tell if I had symptoms. I was pretty sure that I wasn't going to test negative. But I was kind of hoping the last couple of days that maybe I'd caught like a regular cold instead of still having COVID, but no such luck.
Well, seeing that you're the county executive, obviously you have to make decisions regarding schools, businesses, regulations that we'll have regarding COVID. And again, it doesn't play favors and that you have it. Yeah. I've had it. And especially with this Omicron variant, so many of us have had it. And I mentioned again in the opening that in Montgomery County yesterday, there was a virtual town hall meeting. I don't believe you were on it. If you were, please correct me.
No.
I know it was held by
county meeting. It was one person.
Right. Council member Tom Hucker's virtual town hall. Correct. But still, he had about 3,000, people on it, parents, some staff members in the county schools, over a three dozen, I believe, students were on it. Not everyone spoke. Did you take that in?
I kind of followed it. Like, what came in yesterday is the same thing. Looks like my email. My email is pretty heavy, and it's pretty split. I would say, there's, on a given day, sometimes it leans more toward, please go all virtual. Other days, it's like, thank you for not going virtual. This real divide in the community is how people see this, and it's really difficult. I don't make the decision on this. This is a school decision. It's up to the superintendent and the Board of Education, and because they're a state agency, they operate under the State Board of Education. But we're, providing support. They certainly, talk with our health officer about where they, where we think things are. But they are, independent in terms of their ability to make a decision.
Describe where you think the county is in regarding schools.
I think we're in a really difficult place. I feel for particularly the staff, faculty and staff that has to go into a school because we know that there are pretty high rates of COVID in the county. We know that they're going up. You've often find out after somebody has COVID that they had COVID. So things may always be a little bit less safe than you think they are. And, you know, we've got a teacher population which is skewed toward the older side, which means they're more vulnerable. And on top of that, I mean, they're having a large number of absences from teachers who are sick. The school system is not able to fill those absences with substitutes. We know they've got absences with bus drivers. There are not substitute bus drivers around to fill those shifts. And so you've got a problem both with the student body's health and well-being, and you've got a problem with whether you've got enough staff to keep the schools running and delivering instruction the way people think they're going to be able to do that. And it's very frustrating.
The governor of Virginia issued a 30-day state of emergency today. And so we're seeing more sort of stringent measures being put into place. And I know you said that, you know, you don't have the final say in terms of, you know, what is done in the county schools. But I think it would be safe to say, you can probably exert some influence in what is done. When you hear some of the comments that were made last night, like, you know, one young lady says, I'm afraid to go to lunch because, you know, lunch is a COVID frenzy. Most of the students aren't wearing their mask. One parent says she thinks it's unfair that her student is being marked absent when the family is too scared to send their child to school. So I'm mentioning some of these things that, as you mentioned in your email, you see every day. And this is not unique to Montgomery County.
Nope.
But as we are moving just 10 days into 2022, are there things that you've learned from 2021 in regards to COVID and the county and schools or any other part, you know, of the county related to COVID that you can use moving into this new year, maybe to do things differently or address it in a way that you didn't before?
I think that's one of the most frustrating things about where we are with COVID. I think people are so anxious to go back to normal. people express kind of bafflement at how out of control the cases are. I just remind people, you know, a year ago, you know, 9 months ago, we didn't have these number of cases. We were under really strict quarantine or lockdown in the county. You know, you couldn't go out and do the things people are doing now. And, you know, to the point of, you know, the woman, you know, raised the issue about lunch in schools. This is, you know, the most unprotected place that people are. And people are close to each other. There are a lot of kids in the cafeterias. It is a weak spot and a very hard to correct weak spot unless you're going to send all the kids outside for lunch. It's a very difficult weak spot to correct for. It's, you know, I've introduced legislation calling for a mask, vaccine passport to get into restaurants, bars, and, you know, gyms and things, because those are places where if people were without masks, and if they get COVID, they are most likely to be able to spread it. And everybody has their mask off, much like no different than a kid in school for lunchtime. You and I go to a restaurant, we're not eating with a mask on. That's impossible. So these are vulnerabilities, and we're kind of ignoring, I feel, you know, we've kind of moved too quickly toward normalcy, despite the evidence that this is anything but normal. I'd rather see, you know, the willingness to be in a slightly more restricted environment until these cases start going down. There's a lot of assumption that, you know, this isn't as serious as Delta, but there's evidence, for example, that kids actually are getting more frequently sick. We know there's evidence about long COVID and the effects of long COVID. I think we focused a whole lot on the deaths and not paying attention to people who may be getting long COVID. So I think our exuberance about hoping things were going to get better has kind of led us probably to move a little bit faster into normal than COVID is willing to go into.
Our guest,
it's going to take a while to bring our numbers down.
Our guest tonight is Mark Ehlerich, the county executive of Montgomery County in Maryland. The phone lines are open. Questions, comments for the county executive. Are you a resident of Montgomery County? Do you want to know what's happening, what the county executive plans to do in regards to schools, in regards to the vaccine passport program. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is your opportunity to talk to County Executive Mark Eldridge. Mr. Executive, can you expound a little bit more on this vaccine passport? What is that? Is that something county residents have to carry with them, like the vaccine card?
No, I want a very non-onerous system. I mean, I've gone to restaurants and I've gone to listen to music where people require proof of vaccination. It's really easy. I mean, you get to the door, somebody's already told you, or there's a sign that says, have your driver's license and proof of vaccination ready. You go to the person who's going to seat you. They say, can I see your driver's license and proof of vaccination? You show it to them and you're in. I've been in numerous places over the last few months where people are doing this, and I don't see any lines. I don't see any people getting furious about being asked for their, you know, proof of vaccination. And I think it's the smartest thing that we could do right now. It is probably, when you do contact tracing, you know, one of the most likely places to be listed by a person who's got COVID is to where they were. It's a restaurant. To ignore that, I think, is a mistake, and I think we need to do what we can to try to bring these cases down. I mean, it may be that, you know, 6 months from now, everybody's got Omicron, and for a short period of time, and people need to remember this, you might have some natural immunities for a short period of time, but sooner or later, people are going to have to wrap their heads around getting vaccinated.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mark Eldridge is our guest tonight, County Executive for Montgomery County. Mr. County Executive, I mentioned that the county started distributing rapid home COVID tests today along with the KN95 mask. I believe I've got that title right. And I was sort of in the county today, and I saw some of the lines, you know, going into the libraries. Talk a little bit about how you think that went today and how what you're handing out may sort of align with what the federal government and the Biden administration is hoping to do in terms of distributing those COVID tests to Americans, you know, throughout the nation. Yeah.
Look, I'll say, obviously, we're not waiting for anybody else to do anything. Our experience throughout COVID has been we need to assume that we might be able to act faster than other people are. So we're trying to get ahead of this. We, you know, here we had orders for rapid tests out there for literally a few months, and, you know, from one of the most reliable suppliers. And, you know, because of supply chain issues or whatever, we never got them. We were able to, we saw that D.C. finally got some, and we were able to piggyback with D.C. supplier, and we've got a million kits coming in now. We've ordered another million kits, and we've got masks. The schools are ordering masks for the kids. So we're trying to build up as much supply as we can possibly have. It was one of the things that when we have a lot of personal protective equipment, for example, in stock in the county, and when we went into this, I made sure that my people were not buying on the 2 week or 1 month interval, but actually bought large enough supplies so that if we got hit by other waves of COVID, big surprise, because that happened, that we'd actually have the supplies in place rather than be scrambling on the internet to try to find stuff. So I was excited today to see these, you know, the centers open up. We're also doing distribution of tests through our partners around the county. We work with folks in the African American Health Program, the Salute of the UNISTAR, and any number of other community groups where we use them to kind of extend our reach into the community. And, you know, something we learned during COVID was using these community groups to do work that we thought we could do, but we could not do with the efficacy that they could, and we didn't have the community trust level that many of these groups had. Our learning from that is, you know, we're making that a normal part of how we try to reach the community now, is working more with community partners than the county ever has before.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about issues that are pertinent to or specifically to Montgomery County, focusing right now on COVID-19, the county's response, the schools, what's happening for businesses and residents, and plenty more that we'll talk about, again, relative to Montgomery County. 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines, and Emmanuel is calling from Rockville.
Ask the executive a question as, you know, as regarding the restaurant situation. If they have a right, now, not that I'm opposed to, you know, vaccinations or anything like that, I am fully vaccinated. Can we ask the question when we go in the restaurant whether the staff and the employees of the restaurant are fully vaccinated? Because we don't know who's serving us. The cooks, are they fully vaccinated? The servers, are they fully vaccinated? You know, that would be a concern for the customer that comes in.
All right, Emmanuel, stay right there on the line. We're going to let the county executive address your question on the other side. We're going to take, though, a quick break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, stay right there. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight, our conversation is with Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich. And right before we jumped over to the other side, Emmanuel from Rockville had called and had a question for you, County Executive, about should there be something that tells us whether or not the workers in these restaurants are vaccinated. Can that even be something that can be done?
I mean, I suppose technically we could require the vaccine for all employees, but obviously we haven't done that. And I know that, you know, if we push that with the restaurant industry, given their shortages in terms of staffing, they might consider that. It's interesting. I'd say that some of them would argue this is going to be a disaster, but the restaurants I've been in, you know, the management usually tells me that, you know, everybody there has been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. They really push their staff to be vaccinated because they need their customers to be comfortable. So, I, you know, if I was going into a restaurant, I'd ask the manager, you know, do you have a policy that whether or not your staff is vaccinated? And I think if enough people ask that question and enough people made a decision that they wouldn't feel safe going in, you might see more effort on the part of some managers to push that a little bit more. But I will say the difference between the employee and the customers, I mean, our masks are off. And, you know, every restaurant I've been in, the employees are wearing their masks, and I have yet to see an employee not wear their mask, like, over their nose and in the right place. And so I feel like, you know, at least, you know, they're masking the way they're supposed to mask. I feel better if everybody is vaccinated, but, you know, obviously the society is not nearly prepared to do that. Depending on what the Supreme Court does, it may become impossible to require that.
Well, you know, and Emmanuel, if you're still on the line, I'd like to actually hear what you think about this, because I think it's an interesting question, but I also think the county executive brings up a valid point, is that they're not necessarily requiring everyone who comes into a restaurant to be vaccinated. And they do ask you to wear your mask, but yet you're saying you want to know if the workers are vaccinated. Yeah. So if that's a request on your end, then couldn't every employee in the restaurant say, well, wait a minute, we don't want to work here unless all establishments have some kind of stipulation that anyone that comes in is vaccinated? You hear what I'm saying, Emmanuel?
I didn't.
You did not. Well, what I was saying is that, you know, your point is well taken, but I thought the county executive had made a valid point with saying, you know, listen, you know, the customers that come in are may not have their mask on, but all the workers have to wear theirs. And so if you're asking for information on whether or not all the workers are vaccinated, these businesses aren't asking the consumer that comes in if they're vaccinated. They're only asking them to wear their mask. So why should we put more of a premium on the workers than we do the customers who come in?
Now, well, what I thought the program was geared towards was showing proof of vaccination when you enter a restaurant.
Yeah.
I don't think that you know, if you can't play both sides of it,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, that it's not fair to the customer when
sure.
you ask a customer coming in the door, you know, show proof of vaccination.
Right.
You know, I believe in, look, I'm fully vaccinated. Of course, I believe in the program. Definitely, I wish everybody would get vaccinated, to be honest with you. I'm seeing 2 years old, 3 years old, you know, that's not vaccinated catching COVID. You know what I mean? It's heartbreaking to watch. I got a nephew, 3 years old, got COVID, you know, and that's a lot to fight.
So a county executive, then, with Emmanuel's comment, so to be sure, I'm on the right track here, then I'm going to go back to the passport issue. So is that what the passport issue is about, that going into businesses, you're showing that you're vaccinated? Is that kind of where Emmanuel is?
The reason we're doing that is because if you go into a business, a restaurant, because we're not doing this for all businesses. We're not doing it for retail because your mask doesn't come off in a retail setting. If you're going to go into a place where you're not going to have a mask on, then we want you to be vaccinated. We would like to have at least a higher level of assurance that you're not capable of spreading COVID. And, you know, obviously the vaccines aren't perfect. We get breakthrough cases. I'm an example of a breakthrough case. But we want as few people as possible who can spread COVID into spaces where other people are going to be.
Gotcha.
I'm in a world of imperfect solutions. So sometimes what you try to do is damage control and minimize the amount of damage. And, you know, obviously this minimizes it. It's not perfect. But, you know, if I'm, you know, I'm vaccinated and boosted, you were, you know, you get COVID, you didn't willfully make a decision that it would be perfectly fine if you got COVID. You actually tried to make a decision to avoid getting COVID, and then you got hammered. If somebody decides I'm not getting vaccinated and I don't care if I get COVID, I feel I have a little more ability to protect other people from folks who aren't interested in even trying to protect themselves. I can't make you protect yourself, but I can try to make it so I can protect other people from potentially bad decision that you've decided to make. But this is all imperfect. If this were perfect, we wouldn't be in this mess.
Right. So, Emmanuel, your point is well taken. So now I'm clear on where you were going with this. So thank you so much for your call and your comment. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight we're speaking with the county executive for Montgomery County, Maryland, Mark Elrich. We are talking right now about COVID-19. We're going to talk about some issues regarding affordable housing, some of the comments from Governor Hogan today during his press briefing, and other issues that are pertinent to Montgomery County. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. Manuel is calling from the district. Go right ahead with your question or comment.
Good afternoon, sir. And I'd like to say good afternoon to the audience. I'd just like to say, these restaurants, they really don't care. All they care about is our money. Before the government made them put these policies in place, they were willing to open up when COVID first hit because they want to stay afloat. They want money. I'm going to the restaurant, get sick or whatever. Oh, they were a good customer. They used to come in every day. You know what I mean? Really, they don't care. These businesses want money. It's about dollars. It's about cents. They don't care about us. The people up on Capitol Hill are playing politics. It's not politics. It's politics, and it's about dollars and cents, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Manuel. I'm sure you've probably heard that sentiment, County Executive.
So, look, you know, I'm not going to demonize the restaurants. I look at it this way. Hey, a lot of these people are carrying an enormous amount of debt to open up a restaurant. There was no forgiveness for them. You know, if they weren't lucky enough to get the federal government's money, then there's no forgiveness for them. If this had been me, I would have just said at the beginning, I would have said, we're going to postpone payment on all loans, commercial and residential, whatever. And that, you know, we're going to take a pause and that businesses can, you know, have the right to figure out a workout once they get out of COVID so that people weren't desperate to stay open so they didn't lose their businesses. I mean, I there are some restaurants that are big chains. They trade on the stock exchange. They'll survive pretty much whatever happens. But there's a ton of local restaurants, mom and pops, people put their lifetime savings. And I get wanting to be open. I don't begrudge them. It just, we had to make a decision that was really, really difficult. You know, my choice when I made the decisions I made was to prioritize human life. I flat out was not going to watch happen in Montgomery County, what happened in New York City when I saw those bodies being pulled out of apartment buildings. That was terrifying, and I was determined we were not going to see that here, and we were going to minimize the human toll that this virus was going to take. That meant it had a toll on businesses. I supported the county put out money to support businesses. We supported the governor's effort to provide more money. We supported the federal government's provision of money to the private sector. The hardest thing for me is that the only people who seem to be made whole out of all this will be the banks. And there's a whole lot of other people between the banks and us who are going to take big hits for this. And I wish there had been a willingness to spread the pain around so that it didn't require some of the sacrifices that the businesses had to make, but the lenders themselves had to take some of the heat for this as well. This is unprecedented. And again, you know, we did not have the tools to do the things that, you know, we should have done early on. I wish we did, but we didn't.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking all things Montgomery County. Phone lines are open. If you have a question, comment that you'd like to direct towards the county executive, now is the time. 202-319-7810. Manuel, thank you so much for your call. Let's go back to the phone line. CJ calling from Northeast D.C. Go right ahead, CJ. I think we lost CJ. So, CJ, give us a call back. County Executive, let's switch gears a little bit, and we can come back to COVID because sure. Obviously there's some other issues we can talk about regarding that. Affordable housing is sort of taking a top spot in the conversation in Montgomery County. You are running for re-election, correct? And so you got a couple other folks who are going to be running for the Democratic nomination as well. Right. There was an article in the Washington Post a couple of days ago talking about affordable housing. Again, this issue is not unique to Montgomery County. It's an issue here in the district. But we do know what the median house price right now in Montgomery County has hit a record high, almost $560,000.
Yep.
But this report says you guys are falling behind on your goal of trying to get 23,100 new affordable housing units in the next 8 to 9 years. Talk about that issue. This is a nationwide issue, but really especially in Montgomery County, the most affluent county in the state of Maryland. Yep. Is that a problem, you think, and where does it land on your list of priorities?
So this is a really high priority for me, but I have a very, you know, different view of what's happening here. I mean, from talking to, you know, one of our leading affordable housing providers, they point out that Montgomery County lost about 30,000 affordable housing units in the first decade or so of the 21st century.
And how does that happen? And I want you to get back to it, but how does that happen, County Executive?
Because we don't have rent stabilization. Because we don't have no net loss of affordable housing. So if somebody buys a building and decides, you know, and, you know, there are places that are great examples like Silver Spring, where at one time the rents, you know, were more moderate, but as soon as you fix it up and make it a place to be, the rents go up, not because people suddenly experience new costs, but because the desirability of the place drives the rents higher. We did nothing to protect existing affordable housing. We have no net loss policy. We're trying to write a no net loss policy to submit to the council. I'm a believer in rent stabilization. I know the district has it. I think, you know, that a well-crafted law that doesn't include new construction, because I have controls on some prices within new construction, would be a way to help make sure we preserve the affordable housing. But the projections from parking planning zone studies show not only, you know, what we know is the loss of, you know, the 30,000 units or more in the first decade or so, but they're projecting that over the next 10 years we'll lose between 7 and 11,000 more units of affordable housing. And lose doesn't mean like they disappear. They just become transformed. Somebody turns them into condos. Somebody knocks down an existing building and puts up high rises that are much more expensive. This happens all the time in the county, and the county's never been willing to deal with it. So, you know, the solution apparently is that we'll just build more market housing and hope that more market housing makes other housing cheap enough to become affordable to low and moderate income people. You will hold your breath a very long time before that happens. It's an absolutely absurd approach. It's a Reagan trickle-down Koch brothers solution of let the market solve the problem. The market in this country has never addressed affordable housing, and it never will. The only affordable housing you're going to get is if you target it.
Do you have support on the council for your position?
Not right now. I mean, this is a very, you know, the leadership anyway. I'm not talking about Gabe and Evan, but, you know, when you talk about Hans and apparently Tom and some others, is we should just let the market run its will, and then whatever happens, happens. And the market's not going to solve this problem. It's just flat out not going to solve it. It is not an easy problem to solve. We were on a phone call today with Amazon folks about affordable housing. But one thing, you know, for example, that we're going to do is we're making a list of all the county properties, parking lots, garages, and empty lots that we own, and we're going to be soliciting proposals from affordable housing developers for building affordable housing on these sites that we have. We have to do something dramatic and different. We will submit legislation to prevent displacement of people. Displacement is a huge issue, and that's also one of the things that's not going to be better. I noticed Bethesda Beat ran a story about an approval of a housing project in Bethesda where the number of affordable units that will be there now are less than the number of affordable units that were there in the older building. So they're getting more units, and there will be less affordability than was there before.
Hold your thought, County Executive, yeah. And I want you to pick up on that. We're going to take a quick timeout. We're speaking with County Executive of Montgomery County, Mark Eldridge. Phone lines are still open. If you'd like to get a call in, question, comment for the County Executive, 202-319-7810. This is the Insight segment. We'll be right back after this quick break. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. We're joined tonight by Mark Eldridge, County Executive for Montgomery County. County Executive, right before we took a quick break, we were talking about affordable housing, and I did sort of want to bookend that topic with the issue that's really hard to avoid, especially in Montgomery County. We talked about it being the most affluent county in the state, but it's also a county where, you know, the household income of whites versus folks of color, mostly black and Latino, is double that. And so then you have that racial dynamic there when we're talking about housing. How does that play in to your approach to that issue regarding affordable housing when you see something so stark as the household income being double that of a particular group or groups?
So this is one of the things that infuriates me about the approach being taken to affordable housing. Bethesda is a kind of classic example. It's where we've gotten a ton of whatever housing is being built there. The units are absolutely unaffordable. And when we did a master plan for Bethesda, which I proudly did not support, and what we found is almost all the units being built are either one bedrooms or two bedrooms. There will be no minority families moving to the west side of the county. Not only are they mostly, you know, one and two bedrooms, but the prices are extraordinarily high. They're higher than the existing market in Bethesda. And so we've made it even more difficult to move there. On top of that, the condos are in a special class all by themselves. We've got multiple condo projects that have asked to be exempted from the affordable housing requirements of providing units in their building, because even though they have to give me the unit for the right condo price, the condo fees are so high that the tenants can't afford the units. And so they want to be able to put those tenants, here's a surprise, someplace else. And so this is a huge problem. And the council knows about it. The planning board knows about it. They're tone deaf. They look at the neighborhood and say, oh, look at this defensive neighborhood. There's lots of, you know, wealthy people live here. We must, you know, build something there. Meanwhile, the property that we have control over, the property that we zone and we put conditions on, there's no requirement for those properties to wind up being affordable, or any, you know, or reasonable portion of those properties being affordable, or a reasonable portion of those properties being available to people who have families. But here's something that, you know, I also want to point out. When somebody says we're falling behind and the solution is zoning, you know that they don't know what they're talking about. Because in Montgomery County, we are zoned for right now 85,000 units for which you can build if you, you know, submit plans and you want to develop an area. We're zoned for at least 85,000 units. On top of that, there are 45,000 approved units that could be built tomorrow. They're already approved. All you've got to do is come in and pull your building permit. When Park and Planning asked developers why they weren't building units, the answer was, A, a lack of jobs. You're not going to get additional construction unless you bring jobs here. And the other reason was the rents aren't high enough. Now, you've told me how high my rents are in Montgomery County and how astronomical it is. You're right. But when the rents aren't high enough, who do you think is going to be moving into those apartments if they can ever afford the rents? So we've got policies that are totally divorced from people's lives and the situation on the ground. And, you know, I sat on the council, you know, 12 years. I voted against a bunch of these plans because people were like, well, we need to do this because we're going to get housing and we're going to get jobs. We got virtually no housing. We got even less jobs. All we did is increase the development potential for people. But people still aren't coming here for jobs, and we're not attracting jobs. I have a very aggressive jobs policy. I have a very aggressive economic development program because we recognize the county's got to start generating jobs again and have economic growth. And hopefully the creation of jobs leads to the creation of more housing. But this simplistic view that if I just build more housing, first place, as the developers have said, we're not building it because we can't get the rents. And if you just say, I'll just zone you to build more housing, it doesn't mean anybody's going to build anything. And that's, you know, the frustrating thing is, you know, the planning board knows that zoning doesn't create construction. You know, there's no shortage of capacity in Montgomery County to accommodate more building. So instead of examining the problem and saying, if I could build it, and if I'm zoned to build it and people aren't building it, what's the problem? They don't do any of that analysis. They jump to, well, we must zone for more housing. And we don't care if it's market, which means all these other folks are going to be left out. I could go on and on about this, but it is, you know, there's a word for greenwashing, there's whitewashing, and this is affordable housing washing, where people are pretending they care about affordable housing while telling you they're going to build market housing. And well, somehow the market will cause other stuff to trickle down. Well, I know all about trickle down. And it ain't what anybody thinks it is.
Well, we'll definitely keep an eye on this issue. As I said, obviously it is not just particular to Montgomery County. It's an issue throughout our region, especially here in the district. In our last few moments, County Executive, is there, as we're just 10 days into the new year, is there a singular issue that is at the top of your agenda or the council's agenda? Or leaders in the county agenda for 2022. You can take that either way. You can take it as your own, you know, what your top issue is, what you think the council's issue is, what you think the top issue should be for the county. Is there such a thing as one, or is it just a multitude and you don't have one?
Well, I think there are a bunch of things. When you talk about racial equity, there's an enormous amount of work we need to do on racial equity. You know, the county, you know, is divided geographically. There are, you know, income differences depending on where you live in the county. They're very real. There are, you know, the school systems talked about an achievement gap. I think those first discussions originated over 30 years ago, which tells you that we haven't made a whole lot of improvement on dealing with the achievement gap. In the bigger picture of the county, I look at economic development as, you know, one of the biggest issues, because our ability to address problems depends on our ability to grow the tax base, which is why, despite what some people say about me being anti-development, the only thing I want out of development is they provide the infrastructure I need. But if we can get infrastructure, then we can have development that, A, we can manage, and we can have development that'll grow our job base and provide, you know, a better base for going forward. And we're very focused on bringing in, you know, those jobs which provide people decent living so they can get decent housing in the county. We think, you know, we should be able to become either number one or number two life sciences center in the country. We think we have things lined up for that. I've been doing a lot of work around White Flint and in terms of bringing both a university presence there and a life sciences presence to that metro station there. We're working closely with WMATA on this. So for me, if we could get the county to a point where we start becoming an active attractant for jobs, and I think we're already seeing this already. We've had some pretty substantially good news over the last year. We think we can put the county back on the map. We can reassert ourselves as being active and interested in providing economic development. We'll be able to provide more opportunities for our residents, and as we get more revenues, we'll be able to provide, you know, more programs that help train people and prepare them. I'm a big believer in early childhood education. I'd like to be able to extend that farther and deeper into the community. So, you know, all that hinges on money. And since I don't have a printing press, the closest thing to a printing press is, you know, creating things, you know, forces in the economy that are able to provide the dollars we need in order to support the kind of growth we want and support the residents in this county. So I'm somebody who, you know, I look cautiously at developments. I want to make sure that if I'm going to support something, that the county is going to get back what it needs to get from a development in order to sustain itself. It's got to be a two-way street. But I've found plenty of partners in the business world who are willing to talk about that and to work with us now. So I'm confident we can move in that direction.
In our last minute, I think we have about a minute left, Governor Hogan held a press conference today, yep. Talked about a variety of things, talked about getting tougher on crime, talked about wanting $500 million from the General Assembly to be approved to hire more police officers, to have more, you know, sort of power to arrest and jail offenders. Did anything stand out to you if you happened to catch the governor's press conference?
Look, I'm interested in the money because, you know, there are real salary issues we've got to deal with the police department. We are one of the lowest paid police departments in the region. As we take this department through changes, as we try to reimagine policing and come up with new standards for policing, you know, we can't lose sight of the fact that A, these people put their lives on the line, and B, if we're going to, you know, expect to attract the best people into this profession, you have to pay people. And I would extend this to teachers and firefighters and some of our other jobs. You got to pay people like you want the best people in the profession. If your pay is poor, you're not going to be getting people who, you know, are saying, I really want to do this, you know, but I want to be compensated fairly.
Right. So we definitely, that's a topic that we'd like to sort of dig into a little deeper with you, County Executive. Unfortunately, our time has run out. But as usual, we always appreciate you joining us here on the Insight segment on the Daily Drum. He is Mark Elrich, County Executive for Montgomery County. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM for this Monday, January 10th. Our thanks to Mark Elrich. I am Bramante Bryant. In for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.